The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
This is Fantasy Football Today from CBS Sports.
On his way to the end zone.
I'll tell you what, that was a spectacular play.
It's time to dominate your fantasy league.
What a play! Off to the races! Touchdown! Oh, he's done it again!
Now here's some combination of Adam, Dave, Jamie, Heath, and Ben.
Happy 5th of July, everybody. Hope you had an awesome holiday. This, of course, is actually Friday, July 2nd. Heath and I are recording this one, but airing it on Monday, so you can all have something to enjoy on your day off. And honestly, I hope everybody just had an amazing, I hope it was better than last year. Last year, 4th of July, absolutely sucked. So I'm hoping, it's only Friday right now, but I'm expecting a fun weekend for everybody around the country, and hopefully all of our international listeners as well. Heath, happy 5th.
Yeah, I hope I'm not currently getting bombarded by Elsa.
Yeah,
she is not letting it go. Just turned into a hurricane right before we started recording this podcast. So
Elsa sucks. Screw Elsa. We're going to talk about some Heath stats, some Azer stats. Nothing really too complicated. Oh, man, I'm just going to yell. I'm just going to yell at Heath for an entire segment. It's going to be awesome. And your emails, your Apple Podcast questions. Our email address is fantasyfootball@cbsi.com. That is the letter I, fantasyfootball@cbsi.com. And leave a five-star review and a question on Apple Podcasts. It's a great way to get your question read on the air. We'll start with an email of the day. It is from Matt in somewhere in Canada. I probably should have picked an American email, right? But no, it's cool. We like Canada. Matt says, "Dear XRP, ADA, and XLM." I had to look those up. I think they're cryptocurrencies.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not my game. I'm drafting from the 2 spot. In all the mocks I do, I always take Cook 2nd overall. But I'm always faced with the dilemma to take Justin Jefferson or someone else at 211. Should I avoid stacking the Minnesota duo and look elsewhere?
Man, I have a...
Oh, no. Heath froze.
Would be really...
Heath, you're back. You're
I think
back.
Really interesting, but I'm not probably going to.
Wait, Heath, I missed
no,
it.
No, I don't have a problem with taking both Cook and Jefferson. I'd be surprised if Jefferson was there at 211 in a lot of drafts.
All right, I think we're having a little bit of an issue. Heath wasn't hearing me. I missed some of the beginning of what Heath said, but I think you're back. Wave. Can you wave?
Yeah, I'm totally okay. Here.
All right, we're good.
Yeah.
So you would take Jefferson there?
I don't have a problem with that. Yeah. I mean, I may not take Jefferson there just because I have AJ Brown ranked higher. But if AJ Brown was gone, I don't think it's a bad spot to take Jefferson.
You've talked about this in years past that, Minnesota might not have, this is when we were talking about Diggs and Thielen, might not have been a very pass heavy offense, but very concentrated. So it was at least fairly reliable. They weren't as high end as Jefferson, but you knew where the targets were going.
Yes, that's the way it's been. Now, they change offensive coordinators every year now without actually changing their system. So, I mean, it's possible that things get spread out a little bit more, but I can't imagine after what they saw Jefferson do as a rookie, they want to throw it to him less.
All right, we are going to be live with Mock Draft. You can see where Justin Jefferson will go. Will he go to the Dalvin Cook manager? We'll find out. Live on the Fantasy Football Today YouTube channel tomorrow, that is Tuesday, 7 p.m. Eastern, with a Mock Draft. So join us at youtube.com/fantasyfootballtoday. We are going to have Adam Rank, Joe Pisapia, and Nando DeFino all on. Hit the subscribe button on the channel. We will see you Tuesday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, youtube.com/fantasyfootballtoday. Time for some Heath stats. Okay. Let's go. Let's see what you got.
You basically hate all of these stats. So
I only know 2 of the 3, but I kind of hate that. I definitely hate the Saquon Barkley one. Go ahead.
Noah Fant played 13 complete games last year. He also, one of those games was the infamous Kendall Hinton game. So I think if you were putting together an Azer stat, you would very comfortably say, let's look at his 12 games with a quarterback that he completed. In those 12 games, 56 catches, 625 yards, 3 touchdowns. Ignore the extremely unlucky touchdown rate for a moment. That's 11.5 PPR fantasy points per game, despite that touchdown rate. Is that great? No. But it was better than every other tight end besides Kelsey, Kittle, Waller, and Andrews last year. It was a half a point better than TJ Hawkinson last year, despite the fact that he only scored 3 touchdowns.
I don't hate the stat. I really don't. I hate the omission of Cortland Sutton in the Noah Fant analysis. That's my only thing, is what happens there?
Well, it's not, and this is kind of like, I can't remember who else we've talked about with this similar situation, but it's not, I don't think Cortland Sutton targets went to Noah Fant. Tim Patrick, KJ Hamler, and Deshaun Hamilton combined for like 170 targets last year. Those guys are the guys that lose targets to Cortland Sutton. I don't think the tight end targets go to him.
So the Azer stat that I would respond to Noah Fant with, and Noah Fant is someone that worries me a little bit, because if I'm drafting Noah Fant, what, maybe 8th round?
Yeah, right? Instead of TJ Hawkinson in the 5th.
I at least want a shot at Noah Fant being a top 5 tight end. Mm-hmm. And the stat that I gave, I don't remember what show it was, Friday or whatever, was that there's only been one tight end in the last 5 seasons who finished top 5 and wasn't 2nd or 1st on his team in targets. And that was,
but that on was, a per game basis, if you only count his games that he played a full game with a quarterback, he was a top 5 tight end last year.
I mean, and he was 1st or 2nd on his team in targets. I just don't know that he's going to be that this year because of Sutton, you know?
Right.
I understand what you're saying, but I think with tight end, guys that really make huge jumps are, from what I'm seeing, are ones that are 1st or 2nd on their team in targets. Now, he might be so close. Like, Tonyan was 4th on his team in targets, but he was only 3 or 4 behind number 2, so he was basically 2nd. I mean, he was really right. Close. It might be a situation like that, and that would work nicely for Fant. I just don't see, you know, to be clear, if you traded Hawkinson and Fant, and they were in the same exact situation, I and everyone else in the world, I think, would rank Fant higher than Hawkinson. I think Fant is a better receiver, right? We all think that.
Here's what I would say, and the number I gave earlier wasn't quite right. 179 targets went to Tim Patrick, KJ Hamler, and Deshaun Hamilton. Fant, in those 12 games, was on pace for 113 targets, which was the exact same number that Jerry Jeudy had last year.
So Sutton only played week 1, right?
Correct. So you could be 185 targets for those, if you want to include Sutton's 6 targets.
And so Sutton had 6 in week 1, and Fant had 6 in week 1. Oh, no. He played week 2. He only played a half of week 2. And he had 6 targets in a half of week 2. Fant had 5 in that game. I don't know what Jeudy. I mean, I'm not going to look at one game. But all right, look, good stat. He was better than, basically, you're saying he was better than Hawkinson last year on a per-game basis. And you rank Hawkinson higher, right? But you'd rather wait on Fant?
Correct. Exactly.
Okay. All right. Give me your.
Yeah, I have them in terms of overall rankings in the same round.
Okay. So you want to do Edwards-Helaire or Barkley next?
Your choice.
Let's save the best for last. Let's go Edwards-Helaire now. Give me your Clyde Edwards-Helaire stat.
I just think this is really weird for a rookie. Clyde Edwards-Helaire played at least 60% of the snaps in each of his first 6 NFL games. That alone is really rare for a running back. He topped 60% of the snaps once in his final 9 games. We talk a lot about the great finishes from Cam Akers, Jonathan Taylor, DeAndre Swift, J.K. Dobbins, and how, like, they finish strong. That's going to carry over into 2021. Shouldn't it bother us a little bit that Clyde Edwards-Helaire played so much more early in the year than he did later in the year? And it's not like some of this, when you use a number like 60%, it could be cherry picking a lot. He was below 50% in several games in the second half of the year. He was up around 70% in several games early in the year. Some of it was injuries. He struggled with injuries. Now, I don't know if that's something you want to use in his favor, but he struggled with injuries in the second half. Also, some of it was they chose Le'Veon Bell or Daryl Williams in certain situations over Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Le'Veon Bell and Daryl Williams were not good. They just chose to play. They trusted them more in certain situations than they trusted him. Mm-hmm. after they trusted him enough at the start of the year to play him as a workhorse back the first 6 weeks.
Well, I don't know how you're projecting the Chiefs, but I do think their offensive philosophy, I feel like I keep repeating these things. I'm sorry. Their offensive philosophy is going to have a major, major impact on four players. Kelce and Hill and Mahomes are going to be great no matter what, but if they go back to first six games of the season before the Le'Veon Bell trade, and I don't think Bell had anything to do with that, it just happened to work out this way. First six games of the season, Mahomes 36.5 pass attempts per game. Last nine games of the season, 41 pass attempts per game. And I think it's even more tilted if you go, like the seventh game of the season was a blowout and they didn't throw much. Their philosophy changed. They stopped running the ball. And that's what killed Clyde Edwards-Helaire. If they go back to the first 6 weeks, Clyde Edwards-Helaire was on pace for 285 carries and 56 catches. So he had bad touchdown luck, but he actually was better than not Taylor, but like it's funny. It's another six game sample size. And Edwards-Helaire's first six games were better than most of the other six game sample sizes. When you look at Swift and Dobbins and Gibson and all that, not Taylor's, but so I just don't know what the Chiefs are going to do offensively. Are they going to try to be more balanced? Are they going to go back to just being amazing? Just give the ball to Mahomes and let him throw 40 times a game. Cause if they do, Kelce and Hill could be the two most valuable players in fantasy behind McCaffrey. Right. So I don't know. What do you think about their philosophy?
I don't have any idea, but I would anticipate they have Patrick Mahomes. They're going to be pass heavy. And the other thing is like I think that explanation correlates well with why Clyde Edwards-Helaire didn't play very much. Cause he was not very good in the passing game. Right. He was below average on a per target basis. His catch rate, 67% for a running back playing with Patrick Mahomes, is pretty awful. And he didn't block particularly well either. So, like, that makes sense. They passed more. He played less. Part of the whole thing, though, about the Andy Reid running back is how involved they've been in the passing game. And that just hasn't been as true with Patrick Mahomes. And it certainly wasn't true for him.
Okay. What about Gibson versus Edwards-Helaire? What about Dobbins versus him?
I pretty strongly prefer Gibson to Edwards-Helaire in all formats. I will take Dobbins over him in non-PPR and half PPR. If it's full PPR, he's kind of like I always rank or project Nick Chubb in full PPR outside of the top 12. And everybody's like, why don't you think Nick Chubb's awesome? And it's because he's going to catch 14 passes. I don't know how I'm not going to project Dobbins very well in PPR.
Okay. All right. And now your Saquon Barkley stat.
Several Saquon Barkley giant stats. You can just explain these one at a time. Okay. The first one's just interesting, and it's actually a Daniel Jones stat that could apply to Saquon Barkley. Daniel Jones averaged 35 pass attempts per game last year in losses. He averaged 26.6 in wins.
Okay.
That is a massive gap compared to other teams with a similar record. Like Kirk Cousins was 31-33. It wasn't much of a difference. Justin Herbert was 38-40. Not much of a difference. Teddy was 32-33. There was a mass. The Giants, when they had a lead, did not want Daniel Jones throwing the ball.
This is bad for Saquon Barkley?
Just interesting. I think it would be bad for Saquon Barkley if the Giants, with maybe an improved offensive line, but still likely no better than average offensive line. I would say you'd have to project below average.
Yeah, you do. Yeah.
If they are run heavy in an obvious way, that's bad for Saquon Barkley because he's not going to be efficient as a runner in that environment.
I don't know about that.
And he's not going to have very many targets.
He's so good. I think he can I don't think he can be like 5.5 yards per carry or something, but...
That brings us to the second stat. Yeah, it's just really, really weird.
Shred it.
In 20 games with Eli Manning, Saquon Barkley averaged 5.2 yards per carry. In 11 games with Daniel Jones, he's averaged 3.8 yards per carry.
Yeah, you know he was hurt, though. He came back from that ankle injury. He played, I would say, probably half of those games.
Well, he wasn't hurt week one of last year.
No, and they played the Steelers in week one.
And he averaged 0.4 yards per carry.
He was really bad. And I went back and I found some other running backs, great running backs who had performances like that. I don't know. I think he's 4.5 yards per carry or better.
I think that probably depends. Like, I think that's in the range. I probably have him projected right. I'm going to look. I probably have him projected right around 4.5 yards per carry. Yeah, I've got him just over that, 4.6.
But you know, with Barkley, if he's the same player that he was, and that's obviously the big question, but if he's the same player that he was, he's the most explosive running back in football. He's the most likely to break off a big run. And that's obviously going to help his efficiency, the look of it. And that's what he is.
He's probably not more likely to break off a big run than Nick Chubb.
I mean, maybe.
Based on historical evidence.
Chubb is terrific at that. And you know, I love Chubb in that regard. But
I know you love. I know you love Chubb.
I do. Oh, hey, Ben.
What's up?
Hey, happy fifth.
Good to see you, Ben. Right on time. And then the final Barkley stat was that he averaged 20% more targets, right around 7.4 per game with Eli Manning, and 6.1 per game with Daniel Jones.
Yeah. So this one's really interesting. Well, first of all, 6.1 per game is still pretty good, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's a 96 target pace.
Yeah, I mean, that's great. And I've said this a lot. If you look at Barkley in his rookie season, his first 8 games, he was basically Matt Forte. He was on pace for 116 catches and 142 targets. But then, and this is all Eli Manning this year, then they had a bye in week 9. And then after that, you said 6.1 targets per game under Daniel Jones. After those 8 games, the last 8 games of the regular season, he didn't play in the playoffs. So the last 8 games, 6.3 targets. So that's, yeah, I think Barkley is like a 55 catch guy, something like that. Maybe a little bit more upside, but I don't think he's a big difference maker in the passing game.
This is not, none of this was actually to troll you, even though it's fun to troll you. It was because I was writing the lead to my bust piece, which is out on the site now. And Saquon Barkley is the feature bust, I guess, in my most recent bust column. And the reason is, in the consensus rankings, he's RB4 currently. I was using the consensus rankings, not ADP, but like consensus expert rankings for who I said, saying the industry is too high on. If he doesn't have 2018 upside, but he does have currently not 100% risk, possibly playing behind a bottom 10 offensive line risk, possibly playing on a team that scores 25 touchdowns again risk, he should not be a first-round pick.
Yeah, I mean, I think if he's healthy, he's a first-round pick.
Because of what he did in 2018.
Yeah, yeah. And at the end of 2019, I mean, the end of 2019, when he got healthier, he was incredible. You know, he was incredible. And not to mention, like, Jason Garrett is just a guy who likes to punch the ball into the end zone. Wayne Gallman scored 6 touchdowns in 5 games in his stretch. And then he had 135 yards the next game.
You know, that's more touchdowns than Saquon Barkley has scored in 11 games with Daniel Jones.
Well, he's never had Daniel Jones and Jason Garrett, except for one game.
I do think, it's worth mentioning that one of those really good games at the end of 2019 was with Eli Manning.
It really, I just don't really see how many catches did he have in that game?
4.
Yeah. It's not like he has 7 catches. I don't see why Eli Manning versus Daniel Jones matters.
It's more like 2018 versus what we've seen since, for the most part.
What we've seen since, right, is a guy who played hurt in 2019 and then finished very strong, and then a guy who played one game in 2020, 1.5. So I get it. It's of all the running backs that you're taking in round 1, he's on the worst offense, at least as we start the season, as we make our guesses. And
at least with the information we have right now, he's probably the biggest injury risk.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think there is definitely some risk there. You're just hoping that he's still that special talent. I don't know that we even need the Azer stats. Heath, you did a great job with your stats. We can save the Azer stats for another time. Let's get to our listener questions here. First from Apple Podcast. This is from Ballin. Ballin $32. Really?
Okay. Can we do the Azer stats on FFT and 5?
No, I'd like to save them for a... you know, because I don't want to do more work. So... here's our ball in $32 in a small town close to Ogden, which is in Utah. Do you know any small towns in Utah?
No, I stayed in Utah for a couple of days in a place not far from Vegas and did some rock climbing, but I can't remember even the town, and it wasn't that small.
Plain City.
Plain City. Perfect. Hi, Michael, Tom, Lionel, and Ken.
No.
Please rate, the question is, please rate the Jaguars receiving room.
B minus?
Yeah, and also rank them.
Oh, okay.
He didn't say that.
I think I go Chark, Marvin Jones, Chenault, but the difference in ADP is probably bigger than, like, I'm going to readjust the projections on Jacksonville a little bit because it's a new regime. And the only guy that they chose to actually have on the roster is Marvin Jones. And the quote we saw about Chenault's been great. The quotes we've seen about Chark have not. So I'm going to move them a little bit closer together, but it'll still be Chark, Jones, Chenault.
Okay, so Michael...
Like, I was thinking Michael Jackson and Lionel Richie.
Yeah, I think this might be people who sang We Are the World.
Okay.
Michael Jackson, Lionel Richie. Is there a Tom in there? I don't think there's a Tom. Kenny Loggins was in there. Kenny Rogers was in there. I don't know, man. It's probably something football that I should get. From Hobbsy Jr., I'm starting a salary cap league, two keepers, half PPR. Any strategy advice you could give me would be great. So again, this is a salary cap league, two keepers, half PPR. Starting it up. Give him some advice for a salary cap league. Well, do you like studs and duds? Do you like balance roster?
It's tough because it's so, especially salary cap leagues are so dependent on what everyone else does. What I would say is figure out your budget. Our values are based on a $100 budget. Put together values before the draft that you believe players should go for, whether it's based on hours or like whatever system you want to use, have some values that correlate to the total amount of dollars that are available. And then really pay attention early on, because sometimes in auctions, the first 10, 15 players, like Jamie's thing was always, I'm going to sit out the first 30 players or something. And that works really well as long as people are overpaying early. It does not work out well in drafts where the first 10 to 15 players go below what you think they should.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's a bunch of, I've been in that situation where there's a bunch of money left at the end, and you'll see like the number five wide receiver who happens to be the last one of a tier goes for lots more than the first four. So you really got to pay attention. The other thing I would say in terms of nominating, there's two strategies. I like Jamie's strategy of get your kicker in defense early or make somebody else pay $2 for it when you don't want to.
$2 out of 100 usually.
Right. Yeah. Might be three. The other thing is the high profile guys that you don't want, the guys that would be your busts, those are my favorite guys to nominate because you're making people spend their money on guys you don't want anyway.
Yeah. I don't know why I always feel like the fifth, sixth round pick guys are the best values, you know.
And in ours, there's almost always a starting tight end and a starting quarterback that goes for a dollar.
Absolutely. Yeah. So they're so fun. In fact, the fantasy baseball league that I check in on the most is the one salary cap league that I'm in, because this is really, it's the best way to do it. You're never just at the mercy of who's available on your draft board. Everyone's available. Then you have to come up with a strategy and you have to put it all together, and it's the best. And I'm in seventh place, but I'm only 5 points away from being in fourth place. So I'm doing okay. Got some pitching injuries. Need to get healthy there. But, you know, when you draft Steven Strasburg and Corey Kluber, what should you expect? From Conman 3, I have Tua in the 15th round of a Superflex Keeper League. Is that value too good? Yes. Is that value too good to pass up? Thoughts on Tua's possible outcomes?
You keep him. As far as the possible outcomes, there's way more than two of them. I still believe like his pedigree gives us reason to believe that he could make a major leap this year, especially with Jalen Waddle, Will Fuller, and Devontae Parker as receivers. And there's still significant risk that he just doesn't ever regain what he had in Alabama 3 years ago, I guess it was now. So very much a great keeper at that cost. Also not someone you can totally rely on.
From The Ronster, 2008. Hello, Thomas, Cameron, and Drew. Are those Saints?
I was thinking Jordans.
Why? Who's Drew Jordan?
I don't know. JD Drew, maybe JD's first name was Jordan.
Cameron Jordan, Michael Thomas.
Yeah, Cameron Jordan, but this doesn't make sense. I don't know.
Oh,
maybe
Saints.
Yeah,
Saints.
But it's Thomas, Cameron, and Drew. It's not Michael, Cameron, and Drew. All right, we're going to hit up Google. Looking for some help with my PPR keeper league. Which is the best keeper value out of the following running backs? Cam Akers in the third, J.K. Dobbins in the seventh, or James Robinson in the 15th? PPR.
I will still go with Dobbins, even though it's PPR.
The only thing I'm seeing here are Saints. Going Saints. From GDeg 6. How high is too high for Najee Harris?
I think first round is too high for Najee Harris.
But top 15, okay?
I'm not there, I think late second, early third is where I'm more comfortable with him, but you're not going to get him there. So again, this is a question of how bad do you want Najee Harris? You shouldn't take him in the first round. If you take him in the second round, it's fine.
Akers, Mixon, Harris, rank them.
Mixon, Akers, Harris.
Okay. From Danny Mac 25, Applebee's quesadilla burger is the best item on the menu. I think you missed our Applebee's conversation.
Yeah, that's a strange email.
No, I was saying that I went to Applebee's. We were doing the welcome back song, you know, because we were welcoming Chris back. And then I was like, I love it on the Applebee's commercial. And then we started talking about Applebee's, and I said it was pretty good last time I went. I don't remember. I think it was about 5-6 years ago. And this is a good place. And then Dave said something about a quesadilla burger, and I said they have a quesadilla burger. And now I know from Danny Mac 25 that the quesadilla burger is the best item on the menu, and it sounds damn good.
I don't believe I've been to Applebee's since I moved to Florida.
No, we definitely have them down there. You don't have to look too hard.
There's not one in my area.
Okay. From Parisian Bubs. Says, hey, Michael, Coach, Chris, and Sean. This is an easy one. I'm just kidding. I have absolutely no idea. A few weeks ago, you mentioned the slow drafts are not the ideal drafting format. My Dynasty League is considering doing our rookie draft as a slow draft for the first time in order to encourage more mid-draft trade opportunities. What do you think of this? And what are your suggestions for pick times?
It's much better for rookie drafts, I think. And I don't have a problem with it. The reason the struggle is when it's a slow draft and it's training camp and there's things that are actually happening. But a slow draft when they're this time of year, I'm perfectly fine with. I wasn't on that show either.
Yeah, I don't remember that. Yeah, I look, if you only have a few drafts, don't do a slow draft. If you have, you know, 10 drafts, one slow draft, it might not be the worst thing, but
four-hour clock or 8-hour clock are the two suggestions that I would have.
All right, and that is it for our Apple Podcast questions. So thank you for those. Keep them coming. Leave us a 5-star review. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, reading your emails at fantasyfootball@cbsi.com.
New CBS Monday. NCIS is back.
We need all hands on deck.
So grab your gear.
NCIS!
And join our elite team.
What are the charges?
Murder.
New cases to be solved.
Double tap to the chest.
Same caliber as the murder weapon.
And new criminals to catch.
That's the bomb maker. Where's the bomb?
A new NCIS, Monday, 9, 8 central, on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick Six, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Host Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Duzable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick Six has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick Six is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.
Welcome back, everybody. Dear Larry, Kevin, Robert, and Danny. Okay, that one we know, right? Come on, Heath. This is the second time. Larry, Kevin, Robert, and Danny. You think you're a Celtics fan. I just do not understand.
I don't think about basketball when I'm on this podcast.
All right, well, this is Mark from a town in Long Island, and he wants to know which football statistics are most predictable / projectable from year to year. Which do you rely on most when building your projections?
I would say that as a rule, efficiency is not the way to go. So I'm volume is more predictable. Catches, stuff like that. Touchdowns are not, and efficiency, at least until you get a few years into a player's career, really isn't either. What I use to build my projections starts a lot with volume projections and then kind of builds out from there.
How do you project touchdowns for DeAndre Hopkins, who used to be a very reliable double-digit touchdown guy, and he has, I believe, 13 to 15 in the last 2 years combined with a ton of targets?
For a player of his extended resume, it'll be a combination of his career touchdown rate meshed with his touchdown rate with Kyler Murray, meshed with how many touchdowns. Like, Kyler affects him quite a bit because he has been a pretty low touchdown rate quarterback, and even, like you just say, Kingsbury's offense has been for passing. And so it's a mesh between what he's done for his career and what he's done recently. For a guy like AJ Brown, it's more of a mesh between what he's done in his career and what is more normal in the league, because he's got a 10% career touchdown rate. Nobody does that.
Right.
But it's that. And then it's also like when you have a guy on a team that you don't project to score as many touchdowns, like the Giants, you've got to take a few touchdowns off sometimes because you don't want to. The one team I've really struggled with that on is Tampa Bay. If you projected all of the Bucs pass catchers to score at their career rates, then you would need to project Tom Brady to be the best quarterback in the history of fantasy football.
Well, one of my Azer stats that we didn't get to was that in his last 7 games, and Antonio Brown played 8 games. Last 7 games, he was the number 3 quarterback per game. Tom Brady behind Allen and Rodgers. He was on pace for more than 5,100 yards, I think more than 40 touchdowns. It's don't forget about how good he was when they added Antonio Brown. And now the first game with Antonio Brown, that was the Saints game, was a total dud. But then after that, he got rolling.
And going back to the volume for, that's one thing that where like Dave and I disagree, and he'll talk about a guy or even Jamie and I, a guy having a bunch of carries the year before or having a bunch of tread on the tire is worrisome for possible injuries. And that makes logical sense. But also studies have shown that volume begets volume. Guys that have shown the ability to hold up to 300 touches are more likely to get 300 touches in the future.
All right, this is from Garrett. Grade my trade in a half PPR 12-team dynasty league. I traded Miles Sanders and Michael Thomas for Jonathan Taylor.
When you pull up the trade chart, like what's your initial thought on giving up those two for Jonathan Taylor?
Even C.
An even C.
Yeah.
My trade chart's based on full PPR, but I think it's still going to like it. I've got Taylor as currently my second most valuable player in Dynasty. And I still think that's probably a little bit too much to give up for him.
Oh, you would not give up Sanders and Thomas?
I would not.
Okay. Okay. From
C minus.
From Andy, from a town around 10,000 lakes.
Minneapolis.
Dear Boggs, Brooks, Tommy, and Andy.
No.
I have 1.1 of my dynasty rookie draft. My quarterbacks are Brady and Roethlisberger. Do I have to go Trevor Lawrence? My running backs and wide receivers are slightly above average, and I have Kittle at tight end.
I assume it's a one quarterback league.
No,
I would take Jamar Chase.
Okay. From Kevin. The top five wide receivers after round 10 episode was extremely interesting. Based on the latest podcast and my amateur opinion of running backs, it seems that round 10 and after is mostly a wasteland. Do you think you'll have an episode in the near future with suggestions on which positions to target and strategies for round 10 and after? Well, we won't have an episode, but we can talk. Oh, Boggs, Brooks, Tommy, and Andy. That's Shawshank.
Mm, we're right at that. I mostly am targeting other people's backup running backs after round 10, maybe my starting quarterback after round 10. Obviously, if you play with defense and kickers, that's where you'd take them after round 10.
See if I have this cool stat. Yes. In the last three seasons, where have we gotten the best value? All right. How many great values have we had after round 10 or later? So these are guys who finished in the top six at quarterback or tight end, or the top 18 at running back or wide receiver. I randomly picked those arbitrary numbers. Top six at quarterback or tight end, top 18 at running back or wide receiver. How many of each position? Five quarterbacks, seven running backs, five wide receivers, nine tight ends. Tight end has actually given us the most value in round 10 or later. I was surprised it was only five quarterbacks, but if you made it like round nine, it would have been a lot more. You had like Josh Allen and Aaron Rodgers last year. We're very close to round nine. One was picked. It was 8.10. One was 9.05. The year before that, Lamar Jackson and Jameis Winston were both in round nine and they finished in the top five. So round nine, it felt like, you know, then it would have been a quarterback discussion. You go round 10 or later, quarterback and wide receiver, only five great values, seven running backs, nine tight ends. You know,
there you go.
Yeah. Okay. And one more email from Luke. Subject line: do I dare keep Daniel Jones? And then the email: gotcha. Of course you don't have Daniel Jones on my championship winning team. Okay. So he says, who do I keep in full PPR super flex two keeper league, 6 point per passing touchdown? So it's super flex and it's 6 point per passing touchdown. Okay. He has, and he can only keep two. He has Justin Jefferson, Calvin Ridley, A.J. Brown, and Tyreek Hill. He also has Dak Prescott and Austin Eckler. And he has to just keep two of them. It's full PPR. Holy cow.
I mean, I'm keeping Dak.
By the way, it's two wide receivers, two running backs, but also three flex and a super flex.
I'm keeping Dak and Tyreek.
Okay. Folks, that's it. I got to say 4th of July is my favorite holiday, so.
Happy, oh.
Yeah.
Well.
I love it.
Happy 4th. I'm glad you enjoyed it so much.
Oh, burgers I made were fantastic.
Good.
And the hot dogs. Thank you all for listening. I hope you had an awesome holiday weekend. Back tomorrow with a more live episode of Fantasy Football Today. See ya.
CBS Monday.
Federal agents!
Here's where we can see them!
NCIS Hawaii is back.
About to set it all on fire!
New criminals to catch.
Armed robbery, aggravated assault, murder.
And new investigations to be solved.
These guys were good, but even masters make mistakes.
Vanessa Lachey and featuring LL Cool J.
Violin Island, you got it.
Welcome to paradise.
A new NCIS Hawaii, Monday, 10/9 Central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.